Welcome to the podcast for Christ Community Church in Oak Ridge, Tennessee. This is the message from Sunday, September 14th, 2014, given by Lee Younger from the book of John, chapter 5.
Like to follow along this morning, I'm going to be in the book of John in chapter 5. So you can turn there or navigate there, whatever you're using. And we're going to be camped out there, so keep it open. Let's pray. Father, thank you so much for this morning. Thank you for the fact that we have the family of God and that when I'm singing songs about your immeasurable love, that I hear the voices of my brothers and sisters singing it as well. And it helps me to believe it when I know I'm not alone in believing it. Thank you for the fact that you've spoken to us. Thank you for the fact that you've rescued us and that you have something to say to us right now. I'm praying you'd help me to keep it simple and direct and that you would, by your Holy Spirit, you would open our hearts to hear it, especially if any of us are resistant or if any of us are feeling kind of dry or cold, that you would go in there and turn up the heat, open the doors, help us to hear you. In Jesus' name, amen. I've always had somebody figured out wrong. There's a person that I've always thought that I understood this person. I've always thought I had it figured out. And I realized this week I was completely wrong about this person. So I'd like to, if you'd let me, I'd like to take a few minutes and kind of clear the air. I'd like to set the record straight. Now, in my defense, I was under the wrong impression about this person because I was told this. The way that I thought about this person, I was taught. And when I heard it, it made sense to me, and so I've kind of always seen it that way. And then I was reading something this week, and it occurred to me, I've always had this person wrong, and I need to look at it again. I think that the reason that I had this person wrong, I'm going to get to it in a second, but the reason I had this person figured out wrong, it's kind of like a person who hasn't been sick in a while, and you look at sick people, you know, and you're like, come on, come on. Like, you know that they've got symptoms and you know they don't feel good or whatever, but you haven't been sick in a while and so you feel great and you're just like, what? Like, get dressed, go to school. It's like when your kids are sick and you're telling them, like, I don't care, go to school anyway. Like, my dad worked in the school system, so I literally never missed school the entire way up. 13 years, like, I never had a cold. I never had a stomach virus or anything. I never skipped school. I couldn't because he was right there. And so, like, there's nothing I could do about it. And when you look at your kids like that and you're like, come on, I know you don't feel well, but let's go. Get dressed. Unless you have a fever of 124, you're heading to the school, you know? But when you haven't been sick in a while, you kind of forget the way it feels. It's like brand new parents, you know, when your kid first gets the stomach bug. And, you know, when you're a brand new parent, you haven't had the stomach bug since, like, you were a kid. So, you know, they get sick and you're like, it's rough and everything and it's kind of gross or whatever. But you're like, but make it 20 feet to the bathroom. I mean, I know you don't feel well, but it's only 20 feet from your bedroom to the bathroom, like, or at least make it to this bucket right here. I'm making this as easy as I can on you, and then it hits you. And that's the thing about being a parent when your kid gets a stomach bug. It's like, it's rough, and it's gross and everything, and there's that impending doom that says, you're next. It's like that, I don't know if you guys watched that movie World War Z about, like, there's zombies on the planet Earth, but it's because there's a zombie infection, you know? And so people are, like, fighting zombies, which is bad enough, but then if it gets on you, you're like, I'm next. And that's the way it is with the stomach bug the first time you're a new parent and they get it and you're like, I know I'm going down next. And the thing is, it doesn't matter how big you are, how strong you are, what good shape you're in. The last time I got the stomach thing, I was in, like, really good shape. I've been running. I've been working out, exercising, all this stuff. I was feeling great, and that thing took me all the way out. I wanted to be dead. I would have loved for somebody to have come to the house and just taken me out. Okay, that's the way that I felt. And it takes you out, like, physically. It takes you out spiritually. Lost my sanctification. The whole thing was unraveled. Like, it takes you out emotionally. One time, and Christy remembers this, but one time I got sick like that, and we had moved this television into our bedroom, and I'm flipping around on the television, and the movie Jerry Maguire was on, and if y'all don't, it's, you know, Tom Cruise, Cuba Gooding Jr., he's like an agent for professional sports. He goes and does his own thing. He gets one client. It's the whole show me the money thing, and they've just got each other, and they're going through this journey. It's a really nice movie. And at the end of the movie, Cuba Gooding Jr.'s character catches this big pass. He gets hurt, but he gets up. It's a touchdown. He's going to get a contract extension. It's all great. He's in the post-game interview. Spoiler alert. He's in the post-game interview, and, like, he's in the tunnel, and he's thanking his family and his friends. friends and everything. And Jerry Maguire, like his agent, the one who stuck by him through everything, is walking out of the tunnel, and they make eye contact. And Cuba Gooding, some of y'all remember, he just looks at him and points at him, gives him that look, and then Jerry looks back at him, and he's like, "You, Jerry, you were always there with me." And I was bawling my eyes out. I was just like, "He was there, man. He was there the whole time." And I was just like, I just didn't have anything left in the tank. I was physically, emotionally, spiritually, I was just like, Jerry Maguire completely lost it, you know? And the thing is, when you're looking at somebody going through a sickness, you're like, come on, man, make it 20 feet. And then you get it, and you're like, I can't make it 1 foot. I can't do it. And I think the reason that I had this guy figured out is that in some ways, it's been so long since I've been sick that I forget how it feels. I'm going to read from John chapter 5 here. Check this out. I'm going to start in verse 1. Sometime later, Jesus went up to Jerusalem for one of the Jewish festivals. Now, there is in Jerusalem near the Sheep Gate a pool, which in Aramaic is called Bethesda, and which is surrounded by 5 covered colonnades. Here a great number of disabled people used to lie, the blind, the lame, the paralyzed. One who was there had been an invalid for 38 years. And when Jesus saw him lying there and learned that he had been in this condition for a long time, he asked him, "Do you want to get well?" "Sir," the invalid replied, "I have no one to help me into the pool when the water stirred. Well, I'm trying to get in. Someone else goes down ahead of me." Then Jesus said to him, "Get up, pick up your mat and walk." And at once the man was healed. He picked up his mat and walked. Now the day on which this took place was a Sabbath. And so the Jewish leaders said to the man who had been healed, "It is the Sabbath. The law forbids you to carry your mat." Okay, so here's the deal. I always thought, and I was told this, and it made sense to me at the time. I always thought that this guy in John chapter 5, he was kind of like the perfect stereotypical example of everything that we know is wrong with like the welfare state, right? This is a guy that won't get up and help himself, and he doesn't want to be healed because if he got healed, then everything would have to change now. He'd have to go get a job. He'd have to go talk to his family. That's the way I heard this story. It's the way I've always felt about it. Jesus says, "Do you want to get well?" And the dude doesn't answer the question. He evades the question by answering a different question. "Do you want to get well?" And he's like, "Well, I don't have anybody to help me into the pool." That's not the question I asked you. This is the way I've always felt about this guy. That he's saying, inside his mind, inside his heart, he's like, "I don't know if I want to get well, because then I can't beg for money anymore. And then I got to go get a job. And then I got to go make up with my family. And then I got to get this whole new life and this whole new identity. And if I'm not this guy, then who am I? And I'm afraid of that. So I know the score of this life. I know how this works. So I think I'd rather just stay here." That's the way I've always seen this guy. You know, you hear those exposés about dudes that are begging for money and how they make thousands and thousands of dollars and it's a great deal, it's a great job if you can get it kind of deal. And that's the way I've always heard this thing for this guy. This is an interesting story. It says Jesus goes down into this place. There's a pool down there, and there's a series of porches that have like little roofs on them. But it's all open. So you can just kind of walk under the roofs, and there's all these people lying there, diseased people and paralyzed people, people that are sick and just broken lives, people that are begging. They don't have anything else that they can do in their life. It's kind of like, it's this weird situation. Everybody's sitting there together, and they're waiting on something. Now, if you noticed, I don't know if you saw this, but you may already know this, but if you look at John chapter 5, verse 3 ends. It says, there's a great number of disabled people used to lie, the blind, the lame, the paralyzed. And then, after verse 3, look at that, it goes to verse 5. It just skips verse 4. And it says, one who was there had been an invalid for 38 years. And you're like, where's verse 4? Like, how did we go from verse 3 to verse 5? And the reason is because in the old version, like, if you have a King James or an old authorized version, they have this little verse in there that says, now, the pool at Bethesda, people believed that there was an invisible angel would come down out of heaven and would like stir up the waters and get it looking like it was bubbling and boiling. And then it was kind of like a magic spell. And then everybody, whoever could get there first, could go down into the water and you could be healed of whatever was ailing you. If you got down into the water first, it was kind of a local legend about this place. Now, what we've since discovered is the earliest manuscripts of the Gospel of John do not have that little addendum in there. So they've taken it out. That's why you go from verse 3 to verse 5. But that's what everybody thought was, every now and then, when you're looking at this little pool, it just starts bubbling up. Now, what we figure now is that place was kind of over one of those natural hot springs. You got like, you know, it's like a shift in the earth's crust. It's like plate tectonics. That's what's going on. This thing bubbles up every once in a while. And they didn't know plate tectonics. And so they didn't have to sit through that class. And so they just thought an angel of heaven, that's the most natural explanation. There's an angel that comes and bubbles this thing up. So now it's a race. And it's a race of all these like disabled people and all these people that are struggling and all these people that are paralyzed. And it's all these people just climbing over each other. And it kind of does look like a zombie movie, I'm assuming, just kind of people trying to get down to the pool and who can get in there first. Because if I can get there first, then maybe I'll get healed. And I've always thought this guy's been sitting here for years. He doesn't even care. He doesn't even want a new life. He's comfortable. I've got this figured out. I've got my source of income. I don't have to do anything for it. I've got my sleeping bag. It's all worked out. I've always thought that about this guy. This week I was reading this story again. I was reading some stuff about it, and I was reading it. And then one day I just kind of took this story on a run. I just went for a run. It was a short run. I was about halfway through it, and I realized it just hit me like a ton of bricks. I was wrong about this guy. I was completely wrong about him. He'd been there for 38 years. 38 years. I'm only 35 years old. I mean, in my 35 years, I've gotten to do a lot of cool stuff. I've gotten to go to a lot of cool places. Just in the last 15 or 16 years, I got to go to China and see where Christy grew up. We stood on the Great Wall of China. With Young Life, I went to Colorado and I stood on a 13,000-foot mountain peak and I could see the Continental Divide. I've watched three kids being born. I've watched them learn how to walk and learn how to talk. I saw all three of them take their first step. Like, I've seen so many cool things. Those things were just in the last 10 years. And this guy was there for 38 years, day in, day out. I started letting the movie roll in my head of what happened when he first got there, when he was first paralyzed. And if you would, just kind of think about it with me for a second. Think about this guy. He's had this, whatever it was an injury, something caused this paralysis, and he's at Bethesda. He gets somebody to take him there because there's this legend about this pool, and this is where you want to be. This is where you want to beg. We're in the middle of the city, and so there's a lot of people there. And then if you can get down into this water, maybe you can get healed. And who knows how long he had been there the first time that the water bubbled up. I mean, it's plate tectonics. They didn't know that. But the first time the water bubbles up, and I imagine, just imagine this guy in your head, and he just gets up on his elbows, and he's crawling on his elbows, doing that army crawl, trying to get down there. But people are pushing him aside, and people, you know, somebody hits him with a crutch, and they drop down in the pool, and they got there first. And he's like, that's okay. That's okay. I just need to plan my route better. I need to think about it. I need to get away from crutch guy and make sure that next time it goes. And so, with his elbows, he backs up. He's like, it's no big deal. I've only been here 2 weeks. It's going to be fine. A couple more weeks pass, and this time it bubbles up in the middle of the night. There's moonlight shining. Somebody recognizes it. Everybody wakes up, and they're like, the angel, the angel. And he gets up on his elbows, and he's getting down to the water, and somebody pushes him aside. Somebody else gets in there first. Now, the question is, how many times does that happen in the first year? How many times did that happen in the second year? Did he make it 3 years and still try to get down into the water? At what point did he realize, it's never going to happen? I'm never going to get down there. How long had he completely given up? Something that he tried to do and he couldn't fix, and he's just sitting there. He couldn't do anything. I realized this guy, he doesn't want to be there. He just doesn't have a choice. It struck me as really, really sad. He's given up because he's helpless. Someone helpless has become somebody hopeless. And that's a sad story. Jesus shows up and Jesus asked him a question and then told him to do something. He asked him this question, do you want to get well? And he didn't do what I thought he did. He didn't just evade the question. I mean, he really answers it. He really says, well, I can't. I don't have anybody to help me down into the pool. When the water stirred up, I can't get down there. I mean, in the way that I used to see this guy, I thought he was basically saying, you know what, I really don't, but whatever I've got to say to make you go away. But that's not what he did. He didn't say, I don't want to get better. He said, I can't get down there. And down there is the only way I know to get better. The only thing I know to do, I can't do. And trust me, I've tried to do it. I tried for a long time and now that's over. And I just can't do it anymore. There's something really cool in these verses. I want to show it to you if you still got it open. Check out verse 6. We just found out about this guy in verse 5. One who was there had been an invalid for 38 years. It says, when Jesus saw him lying there and learned that he had been in this condition for a long time, then he asked him the question. I love that it says that. I love that it says that Jesus found out about this guy and learned that he had been there for a long time. Jesus, the Ancient of Days, the one who created the universe, the one who has watched stars being born, who spun galaxies billions of light years away, has named them all, the ageless one, the eternal one, Father Time himself, looks at this guy sitting on this porch and goes, how long has he been there? 38 years. That's a long time. I think that's really sweet. That Jesus looks at this guy and says, that's a long time to be helpless. And it's a long time to be hopeless. And he asks him a question. Hey, do you want something different? You want to get well? And he says, I don't know what to do. The question that Jesus asked was a question about the way things are versus the way things could be. It was a question that this guy doesn't ask anymore. But it was a question that was at the very heart of his deepest desire. Do you want to get well? What do you want me to do? I would love to get well. What do you expect me to do? The only thing I know to do, I can't. I've tried and I can't. He asks him a question. And then he tells him to do something. Jesus says, get up. Stand up. This is really interesting. Jesus told this man to do something that he couldn't do. And he knows he couldn't do it because he's tried. Granted, he hasn't tried in a really long time. But he tells him to do something. I know I can't do that. I know because I've tried, and I haven't tried in a long time. That's what Jesus does. He asks him a question, and then he tells him to do something. A helpless man has become hopeless. And then Jesus walks into it, changes everything. And all of a sudden, in just a second, you see it. A broken person is living an impossible life, an impossibly amazing situation. Jesus says, get up. And the guy, I don't know if he felt it in his ankles. I don't know if he felt it in his feet. I don't know if he felt it in his hips or his knees or his quads. Or all of a sudden, he just realized the thing I've never been able to do, the thing I haven't been able to do for almost four decades, I somehow sense that I can do it. Because he said to do it, I can do it. And he stood up. He stood up. Jesus asked him a question. He told him to do something. And this helpless, hopeless dude is changed forever. Y'all, in case you didn't catch it, that's our good news. That's the gospel. That's the heart of what we believe. That helpless people who can't do anything about their own hearts, their own lives, become hopeless. There's nothing I can do. I've tried everything. I can't do anything. Jesus steps in, changes everything. And then broken people are living an impossible life. That's our message. That's the good news. And it's not just what Jesus did here in John chapter 5 with this guy. It's what he did with you when he rescued you from yourself. But it's not just what he did when he rescued you when you first came to know him. It's what he does every day. This is the work of Jesus. This is what he does. He comes into helpless lives that have become hopeless. He changes everything with words of power. And then broken people are living an impossible life. This is what he does. This is what he does over and over and over again. My question for you, and it's the question that I would ask myself too, is where are you helpless in your life? Where is it? Where have you given up? Maybe you came here this morning and you're like, nowhere, I'm doing good. I'm walking with the Lord, I'm facing my stuff. And I would say to you, that's awesome, that's great, keep on moving. But for a lot of us in here, you've got something. And it's something, some area of your life. And you know that if you were honest about it, you're just showing up. You're just showing up day in and day out because you've tried to fix it and you can't. And you can't make it move, you can't make it budge. And I don't know what it is. I don't know what area of your life that would be. The thing I would tell you is that Jesus, I believe Jesus has a question for you. I believe he's asking you a question. I don't know what the question is. He asked this guy, do you want to get well? I don't know what your question would be. I know some things about that question. I know it's a question about the way things are versus the way they could be. I know it's a question you don't really ask yourself anymore. And I know it's a question that's at the very heart of the thing you most desire. Maybe for you, it's maybe you hate your job. Maybe it's that simple. Maybe it's so simple as just you just hate your job. You hate waking up every day. You hate the sound of the alarm because it reminds you you got to get up and face that thing. And you don't want to be there. You don't want to go there. But you got to keep going for a certain number of years. And that's just the way it works. You can't stand that you've got to do that thing. And you can't do anything about it. Maybe that's your thing. Maybe your thing's deeper than that. Maybe it's been a long time since your marriage was anything that you want. And if you could, you'd change it. And you've tried to change it, and you can't make it budge. And you don't know what to do next. I'd change it if I could, but at this point, I'm just kind of showing up. But gosh, I want it to be different. I want it to be something else. What is it? Maybe it's your relationship with your kids. Maybe you're frustrated with what you've got there and you don't know how to fix it. You don't know how to change it. Maybe it's the opposite. Maybe it's kids with your parents and you just don't know how to get them off your back. You don't know how to get them to understand you and you don't know what to do to change that situation. Maybe it's something that's happened to you. Maybe it's something that happened to you and you, to be honest, you're just so angry that God let this happen to you. And you don't know how you're ever going to be anything but that. And that's your identity now. I just can't move past this because I'm just so mad at him for letting this happen. Or maybe it's the opposite. Something that didn't happen. And you wanted it to. And it never happened for you. And it's a good thing, and you asked for it, and you wanted it, and it's one of those things that other people get, and you didn't get it for some reason, and you don't know how to change it, and you don't know how to fix it, and you don't know what to do with your own heart. My question is, where are you stuck? Where are you just showing up? Where have you given up that there's any possibility for change? And I bet that Jesus is asking you a question, and my thinking is that we're not going to hear it. We're not going to hear the question unless we're willing to be honest about the fact that we've given up. And I'm not talking about honest about the fact that, you know, I've got some stuff I need to change. I'm talking about some athletic honesty. Like, you need to be an athlete with your honesty. You need to be really, really honest with yourself. This thing, I've basically given up. I couldn't change it, and now I've become hopeless that anything could ever happen. Jesus has a question for you. It's a question about the way things are versus the way things could be. It's a question you don't really ask yourself anymore, but it's the thing you most want. And he's telling you to do something. He's telling you to do something that you can't do. You know you can't do it because you have tried to do it and it didn't work and you're done trying. What if he wants you to try again? What if he wants you to try with him? What if he's going to enable you to do the thing you can't do? And you know you can't do it because you've never been able to do it. I love this thing that this guy says in verse 7. If you've got it, check it out. If you still got it open. It's right after Jesus says, do you want to get well? Sir, the invalid replied, I have no one to help me into the pool when the water stirred. When I'm trying to get in, someone else goes down ahead of me. I mean, I think if you dig deep enough, the cry of this guy's heart is, I wanted that a long time ago. I wanted to get well. I've given up on that because there's no way for me to do it. Yes, in the deepest part of who I am, I guess I want that. But it's been so long since I just started showing up that I don't really know if I care anymore. I have no one to help me into the pool when the water stirred. When I'm trying to get in, someone else goes down ahead of me. Okay, here's what I want you to do. Let's cut off some of that sentence. Cut off the end of it. I have no one to help me into the pool when the water is stirred. Cut off some more of it. Sir, I have no one to help me. I can't do this because there's no one to help me. And I feel like Jesus is standing there as if to say, you do now, baby. You got somebody that can help you. For some reason, Jesus said, I want you to try to stand up.
And I don't know if he was like going out on a leap of faith. I don't know if he felt it in his bones or in his muscles or in his joints, but for some reason he stood up. And I think that in the places that you're stuck, he has a question for you and he's asking you to do something. He's telling you to do something. And what if you did it? What if you found that you could? Because you have someone now. It's not just you trying on your own. I love that Jesus doesn't say, "Why don't you get well?" I think that's probably the way most of us think about changing the thing that most needs to change in our life, is that if God was to come into it, what he would say is, "Why don't you get well? Why don't you change that thing?" Jesus doesn't say that. He says, "Do you want to? I can do something about this. Do you want me to?" He's not telling you to pull yourself up by your bootstraps. He's not telling you to try harder. He's not telling you to try to get your act together. He's not saying, "Come on, you can make it 20 feet to the bathroom." He's not saying that. He's saying you have someone now, and that's the difference. You know, after this guy stood up, and Jesus said, "When you stand up, I want you to roll up your mat." And I think he's saying that because he's saying, everything changes now. You're not that person anymore. You're not going to come back here to this porch. You're not going to lay down on that sleeping bag anymore. We're going to burn bridges behind ourselves, okay? This change, we're not going back to it. So roll up the sleeping bag and walk away from it. So he does. He rolls up the sleeping bag. He puts it under his arm. And I'm wondering, like, if you haven't walked in 38 years, like, what kind of walk do you do? And you know it's got to be like that John Travolta one from, you know, it's like Staying Alive. Like, you know you're getting it, right? So he's walking down the street and he's basically strutting, or maybe he just turns around back when he's like, "I'm going to moonwalk all the way home." I don't know what you would do there, but he's carrying this sleeping bag, and it says in verse 9 and 10, we read this, the very end of what we read, that these Pharisees looked at this guy, and they said, "What are you doing carrying the sleeping bag?" And I can almost imagine this guy saying, "Guys, it's me. I'm walking in the first place." And they're like, "I said, what are you doing carrying your sleeping bag, man? It's Saturday. We don't do stuff like that on Saturday. It's a Sabbath. We don't do stuff like that on the Sabbath." And he's like, "Yeah, but it's me. Like, 38 years. I mean, you've been giving me money. Your dad gave me money. Your granddad gave me. Everybody gives me money. I mean, I've been sitting there for 4 decades, guy. Like, I'm healed." And the way he says is, "The guy who healed me, hello, legs, like, he told me to pick it up and carry it." And they said, "We don't care about that. It's wrong for you to carry the mat. That's against the rules." First of all, you're like, "Man, you guys are some tools, okay? Because 4 decades and the guy's walking. Can we take a time out and talk about that?" They don't care about that. They said, "You're carrying your sleeping bag, and that's wrong. Who told you to do it?" They tracked down Jesus, and they said, "You can't do what you did. You can't heal people on the Sabbath. You can't have a guy carrying a sleeping bag on Saturday. That's against the rules. Who do you think you are?" And Jesus said, "You know what?" This is what he says a little bit later in the chapter. You can check it out. He said, "My Father is always at work, and I'm working too." This is what he's saying to them. He says, "You know, you're right. God took a Sabbath rest. He created the earth in 6 days, and on the seventh day he rested. But you know what happened after that? If you remember your Bible stories, human beings fell. They ate fruit they weren't supposed to, and sin entered the world. And all of a sudden, people became helpless to change their lives, and helpless people became hopeless. And all of a sudden, God went back to work, and the rest day was over. And he's been working ever since then. And this is what he does. Helpless people become hopeless, and he comes into it, and he changes everything. And now broken people are living an impossible life. This is the work he's doing, and I'm doing it too. My dad does it. I do it. You're not going to stop it." And then John tells us that this was the day that they decided to kill him. That was it. What he did this day, what he said this day, it cost our Lord his life. A year and a half later, he's at the Feast of Booths in Jerusalem. And he gets into an argument with these same guys, these same Pharisees. And they're going back and forth. And Jesus said, "Wait a minute, is that why you want to kill me?" And they're like, they pretend, they're like, "Wait," because there's a crowd around. They're like, "Who wants to kill you? You're crazy. You're demon-possessed." And he says, "I healed one guy, and you want to kill me." He's talking about this guy. He said, "A year and a half ago, I did one little thing, and you want to kill me. It was this day, y'all. It was this thing. This is the work of God, that helpless people become hopeless, and Jesus comes in, changes everything, and now broken people live an impossibly unbelievable life, and it cost Jesus his life. That's the way this works. This is what he came to do. This is why he gave his blood. This is why he laid his life down. Because if you're stuck, he doesn't want you to be. Because if you've given up, he hasn't. He has work to do today. He's got a question for you. It's a question about the way things are versus the way things could be. It's a question you don't ask anymore. But this question is at the heart of the thing you most want to be different about your life. And he wants it too. And he knows it's been a long time. And he knows you have tried. And he has something that he wants you to do. Something you can't do. Something that you have tried to do. And you haven't tried in a long time. But now you have someone. This is the work that cost Jesus his life. It's what he did when he saved us. It's what he does over and over and over again. Here in a second, I'm going to pray and then we're going to take communion. We're going to invite you to come up. And we don't ask that you have to be a member of Christ's community or anything like that. You don't have to be a member of our church. But the thing we do ask is that you know that you've given your life to Jesus, that you know that he has come into your heart and that he's done this work in you. The thing that I would ask, as you prepare to come up here and take this cup and this broken bread, as you prepare to come up, as you come up, as you take it, would you try to be athletically honest about yourself right now? And think about, what is the thing that I can't stand it anymore? I hate just showing up. I want this to be different. I want it to change. And what is he asking me? And be open for the question. This is why he gave his life. This cost him his life. And he wants to get what he paid for. He wants to change you. And he can do it. Because you have someone now. You're not by yourself. I'm going to pray and then invite you to come. Jesus, thank you that you gave your life to change the things we can't, the things we have tried, the things that we don't know how to change. And that by your power, you can introduce a new agent into our life, a whole new thing. I'm praying that you would help us to be honest about what you want to do here today. And I'm asking you to do it. Ask us the question. Let us be open to it. Tell us what to do. Make us willing to hear you. Thank you for the blood that was shed, your body that was broken. You started down that path this day when you healed this guy. We want you to finish that work in us. It's in your name we pray.
To find out more about Christ Community Church in Oak Ridge, visit our website at c3oakridge.org. Again, that's c3oakridge.org.